Welcome to the Axe Hounds Podcast, a program for axe enthusiasts, be it restoration, collecting, or selling, or general axe use. All topics related to axes will be covered here. Your hosts are Chris Killinger and Leif Backus.
All right, everybody. This is the first Axe Hounds broadcast or podcast. Excuse me. It's podcast first and a broadcast and video second. So Chris and I will be putting this up first, and the video will be the secondary thing we'll both put on our YouTube channels. And a little introduction. This is going to be a little bit scripted because this is our first time doing this. I imagine the second, third, fourth, after that, it'll be pretty less rigid, I suppose. So we'll start off with an introduction. My name is Leif Backus, and I have Chris Killinger with me. And we're both doing this as a joint effort. Chris, if you want, maybe a little bit about yourself.
So I'm Chris Killinger, like you said. One of the admins, creators of Axe Hounds Facebook group. Been in the axe collecting since early on. And did I lose you?
Yeah, was that your end?
I don't know. It just froze up.
Yeah, you froze for a second there and came back. So these are the kind of bugs that we're going to have until we get it nailed down. But go ahead, Chris.
So I don't know where it got cut off. Anyways, I'm one of the...
Yeah, right there is where it got cut off. Yep.
One of the admins of Axe Hounds and creator. Of course, Leif is the other. Been in the axe collecting since around 2010. Started taking it real seriously around that time. Always was into old tools. Axes just fell into place. I'm the owner of Killinger Woodsman Gear and Tool. I make a lot of axe leather. It's one of my specialties. And then my real job is I'm just a mechanic. So kind of a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, and I'm Leif Backus. And like Chris, I got serious into axes right around the same exact time. We both met on Bushcraft USA, I think, or YouTube first. They're kind of all in conjunction at that time.
I think it was Bushcraft USA, and then I followed you over to YouTube.
Yeah, and this vice versa. I did the same for Chris. And I think I got pretty involved just like he did at the same time and the same intensity right up until today. And one thing I'll say, at least for myself, I don't consider myself an expert in anything, especially axes. I'm a hobbyist. I mean, there's no real professional axeman anymore, I don't think, not in the purest form. There are some guys that use them for restoration and log building and things like that. That might be more who I'd consider an expert in axes these days. But it's a hobby, and it's, I think, for Chris and I both, it's probably out of all the things we do, it's probably the one we're most excited about. Would you agree with that?
100%.
Yeah, I do leather work as well. I would say semi-professionally, unlike Chris, who does it. I'm thinking he's in the professional realm now. You can see a lot of his work on like Dave Canterbury sites and stuff like that. But neither one of us do anything as far as axe-related logmen or anything professionally. So I wouldn't, like I said, we're not experts. We're enthusiasts, and I think that's just as much of a good driver for a podcast as anything. And what to expect from this podcast. Like I said, we're normal guys. You're going to hear a lot of banter. We are going to cover some history with the axes. We do want to have some guests on, and we're going to probably start that immediately on the next couple, because we got some people that want to get on. And I do think there's I don't think there's a huge audience, but I do think there are some people who would be interested in something like this. And we'll get on to, hopefully our podcast will be themed. If we don't have a guest on, it'll be themed about something axe and axe related. And with that, I did want to say maybe this particular podcast being our introduction, maybe a little bit of our personal feelings of why I think the axe I don't want to say hobby. The Axeman lifestyle is so appealing to us. And if you want me to lead, Chris, I'll go with that. You know, it's, you know, I think more than the knife, when I got my first hatchet, when I think I was about 10 or 11, I actually paid for it with my own money. And it was at an antique show. I got raked over the coals for $15 on a one of those OD green straight handle, military hatchets. And, you know, my first trial and errors is how many nails I could put in the eye to get that head to stay on, no matter how much it beat on it. And I think after a couple of years, that culminated with me throwing that down an embankment in frustration, because I'll always remember that. And, my grandfather had his Michigan axe that was in the shop to this day. I wish I had grabbed when we went through all that after he passed. Very silly of me. But the axe, I think, holds a special place in the tools above all others. I think after the knife, it was the first compound tool, right? It's the first thing attached to a stick to, you know, to really industrialize the man. I think it had certainly had the biggest impact right up until the 1900s is what progressed us as far forward as we have. And sure, there are negative connotations to that, but there's a lot of good too. What do you think about that, Chris?
I'd agree. You know, they shaped America with an axe.
Yeah. You
know, from cutting down the trees to hewing the logs. Just that romance is, I think, for me, is what draws me towards the axe more, because I have a huge affection towards vintage hand tools, and I have quite a few, like a lot of woodworking tools. And I think in the beginning, when I used to just go into antique stores and flea markets and just look for tools. You know, at that time, the internet wasn't that great. And I'm talking pre-2010,
mm-hmm.
Prior, earlier than that. I don't know what the time frame is, but ever since I can remember, from my early 20s, I've had this affection. So I remember going into antique stores, and there's all these beautiful hand tools, you know, wood planes and whatever. And there's always axes, and the axes were always cheap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you just bought them because at that time I didn't have a lot of money anyway. So I wanted something, and then the axes were obtainable. So I should have bought more. I mean, I bought what I did, and, you know, I'm thankful that I got what I got, but I wish I would have bought everything. But you never know. But yeah, the whole romance of, you know, somebody chopping down a tree, debarking it, hewing it into a log, and then placing it in place, and then repeating that process hundreds of times to build a structure is just incredible. And so I had mad respect for the guys that used to swing them all day long. So,
I think we vastly underestimate how hardened our just our grandparents were, our great grandparents maybe. I think a lot of, maybe your modern day farmer might have an idea, but other than that, I don't think people have an understanding of how hardened these people were. You know, it sounds, you know, somebody can work in tree service all day, but just take away the chainsaw and now do that with an axe. I mean, phew, man, even I don't want to do that. You know,
I know this summer I was cutting up some ash trees that had been dead. They were dead standing, and the property owners had a tree company come in and cut them down, and they gave them to me for firewood. And I'm telling you, I don't do firewood. I don't heat with wood. You know, I burn it in my fire pit out back, and I've never grown up cutting firewood or anything like that. So, you know, I've worked jobs over the years that involved some wood cutting, but not a lot. And even with a chainsaw, cutting firewood, cutting logs into, you know, bucking logs up and moving them around and cutting them down so you can, you know, chop them into firewood. I can't imagine doing that with an axe. It's just incredible amount of work. And people used to do it with axes. It's just astounding to me. But
on bigger trees.
Yeah, on bigger trees.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot to the whole axe thing. I mean, And that's the other thing is there's so many avenues you could take this hobby.
Mm-hmm.
So many different patterns to collect and brands, and it's incredible.
That's actually where I was going to steer the topic a little bit. You know, it's I think people like you and I, not just specifically our names, but what we're doing is the hobby and our interest is the type of people that are keeping axe making alive. Sure, there's a historical aspect and some guys are making some medieval stuff out there, and but I don't think that's the industry where it's at right now. I mean, if it isn't for the quote unquote bushcraft guys, woodcraft guys, wood carvers that are keeping some of these skills open, it's not the logging industry that's going to keep axes and axe making alive. I could be wrong, and I'm certainly open to be challenged on that, but I just don't see that.
No, they're definitely moving towards power.
Yeah, everything's power related, and that's fine.
The axe is the afterthought.
yeah, it is. It definitely is the afterthought. And you know, I when I went to school, we did environmental con for 2 years, and I, you know, honestly, other than chopping wood with a maul, there was no axe involvement in any of it. And that's a downside. It's like, what a great skill to have. I mean, I wish the I'd love to get hooked up with BOCES to do some axe orientation and stuff like that. What a valuable tool that I think should be part of anybody, any foresters or forest management tree servicer guy's toolbox. Not just for the enthusiast behind it, but anything else to say on that?
I'll just add this. I always tell people, and I always say it's all about the hunt. And, you know, for me, like, I don't look at every axe as a, like, what it's worth. What can I get for this? What can I sell for? That's like the last thought on my mind.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
I'm always looking at what it is, what can I do with it, and how cool is it that I just found this? So I think it's awesome. Just a lot of people in this hobby are doing fantastic jobs of preserving all of this history. And that's what I mean by it's all about the hunt. It's, you know, walking into that store and seeing that handle in the corner, getting over there and picking it up, and it's a freaking Black Raven.
Yeah. Then, yeah.
It doesn't happen often, but I mean, it could. And, you know, the sad thing is axes are made out of steel. And when steel prices are up, a lot of axes are going to end up in the scrapyard.
Yeah.
And they already have, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
Yep. I used to have a guy that went to the scrapyard regularly and used to bring me back buckets of heads. It's like, if he hadn't saved these, they would have been melted down in the scrap. I mean,
I remember seeing that one image on a group. Some guy went to his local junkyard, and there was a giant pile of heads just sitting off to the side. And it's like, and they, you know, they've been sitting there for years. Yep. But they were just going to end up as metal scrap when the prices are high. That's always going to happen.
Yep. And I think it's good. There's a lot of people out there that appreciate the history, and they're saving these axes, and they're preserving them for future generations.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, guys, this will be a little scripted and a little as we get our flow going. You know, one thing I think is really interesting to me, it's kind of bridging off the who's keeping the axe thing alive, is how precise and detailed I believe the axe as a tool got. It's one thing to have wrenches. You can only make a wrench handle so many ways. You know, we went from square nuts to hex nuts or something like that. There's only so many ways to make that tool. You know, at the peak of the axe manufacturing, I mean, we had patterns for all different wood types, regions, hemispheres. Yeah. I mean, that's what really makes me interested, you know. And if anybody knows me, Connecticut's are my favorite pattern. It's really all I'm interested in collecting now after I've been through some others. But regardless of that, the pattern types really excite me. And I, even though it's crazy as some of them I got, I think of the slight nuances between a Kentucky or a Tennessee or something, you know, something like that, it's still really cool. I like how the Michigan pattern is orientated for just hardwoods. But then you look into, like, well, why? What's it makes it so special? Well, the corners are rounded. They're less easy to break off in hardwood. Like, somebody really thought about these things back then. And then look how the catalogs came out to support, you know, their production. I mean, seeing Mike Miller's recently just really made me stop and think for a few minutes of how much effort went into getting those out for sale. You know, if a person, I made a comment, I don't know if you caught it a while ago. If somebody was to release a Kelly Works catalog today, they'd probably be slandered as a hipster company or something like that, with all the different painted heads, the lithographs, all that effort they went into. It's just a catalog. I mean, but these weren't just pictures in a book. I mean, these really took a lot of time to make. I think that was, I don't know, when he showed a few of those, I thought that was the coolest thing I've seen in a while. Maybe I didn't express it, but it certainly was to me.
Yeah, I think it's easy to not understand what back then, you know, there was a time where they had to actually market their product because so many people were making axes. So you had to market somehow. And a lot of companies picked up on that. And I think Kelly was one of them. That's, we won't break into this.
So we can certainly dedicate a whole one to it, but glossing over a few topics, we can certainly do for the next few minutes. Yeah.
So what I was going to say is that's one of the things that appealed me to New Orleans so much is just the amount of marketing they did towards the woodsmen and the outdoorsmen.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not that the New Orleans axes are good or better or worse than any other brand. It's just that they marketed the woodsmen like crazy. Every model they made was geared towards an outdoorsman or a woodsman or a hunter. And, you know, that's our hobbies. You know, we're bushcraft or camping or whatever you want to call it, that's our niche. And to see a brand like that, you know, just go after it, nobody else is doing that today. I mean, yeah, there's companies that make one or two axes for the outdoorsmen, but nobody dove into like Norland did. And then same thing with Kelly, you know, doing, they just dove into the logger. I mean, they marketed the logger, you know, buy this Black Raven so that you can look awesome in the logging camp.
Yeah. That wasn't even that wasn't even something they were thinking about. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. With Nordland too, that's, I almost think to say that I think Nordland saw the writing on the wall. Yeah. It's just one of those things. The axe falls out of use. You have these great big companies producing these things. I just don't think the market wasn't there anymore.
I would say too, Norland was probably one of the last companies to make a go at it.
Yeah, they actually had blister packs almost, plastic. Yeah, they had plastic and cardboard backed right up there at the end. Yep.
I'd have to look and see what the timeline was, but I'm pretty sure it was early 80s. They made them up to the early 80s. You know, and that's pretty recent, but
I didn't know they went that late. I didn't know that.
It wasn't an old company, you know, I think late 60s to early 80s, but I have that information. I just don't have it with me.
Go ahead.
I feel like they were one of the last to, like, you know, let's save this industry. Let's do it this way. But, you know, shortly after that, I don't know when Man Edge went out of business. But it had to have been towards the end there, the end of the axe industry, so to say. And now you're just left with whatever's around now, you know, Council Tools, Snow and Neely. Those are only two American companies I know of. And then,
Snow and Neely held on for quite a while there, didn't they? But didn't they go outside the U.S.? Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened was Snow and Neely's been around since, I don't know, forever. I have a date right here. I thought 1864. So Snow and Neely has been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the timeline. They did tell me, and I kind of forgot. I should have wrote it down. But they did go to a manufacturer overseas, and the quality wasn't there. So now they're back in the U.S., being produced and made in the U.S. and hand-finished in Maine. So it's back to an American company again. But what a heritage, you know, it's a recognizable brand that's been around since 1864. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of those things. I see our steel industry coming back, and I hope it stays. I'd love to see a name as prestigious as Collins come back to the U.S. and, or if not the whole company, a portion of it, to really get back into the mix. But, you know, there's, I can say that for all of them, but they are a name. They still produce. They still have headquarters here, I believe. They just produce everything in Mexico, as far as I know. And it's, who knows what the future holds, but there's definitely a revival in that stuff. And I mean, go ahead.
You never know when a company is going to say, hey, there's a market here again. Let's move production back here.
Yeah. I hope our renewed steel industry would do that. I think it's there. Council Tools got the right idea of producing those higher quality finished axes. Getting, you know, it's just like they're not doing something new. They're going back to something old, increasing that quality and that finish. This is how it used to be. This isn't a new hipster way. This is, I mean, it used to be a lot nicer. you know, back up until what, the 20s and 30s, probably, maybe a little bit later. Which I consider like the peak. You know, it's funny, it coincides too, like the peak. I don't know if that's not everybody agrees, but that golden age of camping. Everybody still camps, I get it. But there's a bit of a nostalgia piece in that era that I think sticks out above others. And the woodcraft guys definitely get on board with that. But yeah, definitely. And I think you touched on, you know, people who are, and I think we could probably, well, this will bring us to about 30 minutes. And I think our first podcast would be good there. But as you said, there are some people now in this revived, you know, axe, I'm not going to say industry. I don't know what you want to, it's not really an industry, but who are making a professional living at it. You know, and the first one who comes to mind is Roy at Vintage Axe Works. I mean, here's a guy who's now built his life of keeping this history alive. I think that's just the coolest thing in the world. That guy can do that for a living like that.
And we'll definitely have Roy on as a guest.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But he's a good guy and he gets it. Like his, you know, yes, he makes a living doing it, but he appreciates the history and the story and not everything is about how much can I make off of this head? How much can I make off that head? And that's what I appreciate. Like there's a lot of guys that want to do this as a living. And there's only so many people that can buy and restore axes. There's only so many people to buy those, you know, and it's frustrating because it's like every 5 minutes, somebody else pops up with whatever co. But like guys like Roy, you know, he stands out because he does a phenomenal job. And
I think that, yeah, there's a difference. Now, it's not just Roy. There's a few others, but there's some others just shove a handle in it and make sure it's sharp and shove it out. Roy's got a distinction, and I like that he's gone to it walks out the door as a complete,
right?
Restored axe, you know, with a sheath. I mean, it's as close as you could probably get to, you know, when the thing was made. I mean, is what he's leading to. And as far as I'm concerned, it's one of the best that you can get out there, you know. Yeah. I'm not in the axe selling business technically. Chris isn't either. I, you know, it's a hobby, but to see people like Roy doing what he's doing, I mean, I think he might be one of our first guests, you know. And then we got some other guys out there who are doing some what I call serious collecting, but not just shoving them in their garage where nobody gets to see them, you know. They're out there posting all the time, getting this history out there. You know, obviously, I'm thinking of Mike Miller right off the bat.
Oh, absolutely. That's another one that's got an incredible collection, and not just in the axes, but like the literature and paperwork. It's just, it's so deep what he has. I mean, you could just spend hours dissecting it all, days really.
And yeah, go ahead.
He's got some incredible representations of new old stock axes, like just blow your mind. Afraid to touch. He has a brand new Lincoln axe, and literally, it took me He went to hand it to me. I wouldn't take it. I was like, no, I don't even want to touch it. Because it's just like, it's so rare to have that just in any condition. And it's his is brand new, you know, like right off the shelf. And it's just, it's incredible. You just can't.
Yeah, that makes me think of something. I remember when I, excuse me, the first time that, you know, the axe thing started kicking off, or at least for me and you, you know, when somebody painted an axe head or took the time to restore something, I kind of scoffed at it, ignorantly, thought it was silly. And, you know, when you come to think about it, it reminds me of something Chris said a few months ago about, somebody who had questioned him about painting an axe and why dress it up like that. And I believe you said, like, this is never going to be made again. That this is it. There's no more, you know. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, like especially like in particular, it was that Black Raven, Connecticut, right? Yeah. Like that is never going to be made again. Now there's some guys doing some Fox ones out there, not deceptively, but still, it's not the same. I mean, and I've taken that approach to my some of mine. Like you can see some behind me that have painted, some that have not been painted. If you're watching this on YouTube, but. You know, I've kind of adopted that mindset too. It's, you know, I have some Connecticuts that I do push through wood that I don't mind burning, you know, some of the basic Collins and stuff like that. No problem. There are some of these that, that are just never going to bite, and it's worth the effort to paint them to the way they might've looked, and take the effort to preserve them. And where these will go when I die, I don't know. Hopefully my kid cares about them, you know, by that point, I don't know.
There seems to be like a bit of machoness that people get this attitude about wall hangers. And I say that with quotations, wall hangers.
Absolutely. Yep.
Here's the thing, you know, I'm on board with swinging every axe you restore. You know, every axe that I restore is capable of cutting wood and doing the job it was intended to do. But not every axe I own or restore is going to do that because of the history. You know, like a Black Raven, the thing with the Black Raven is if you were to use it, there's several risks involved. One of the biggest risks is chipping the bit, taking a big chunk out of the bit. So now you just took a pristine Black Raven and chipped the bit. Now it's got a big old chip out of it. Like, what do you do with that?
Mm-hmm.
You're done at that point. Certainly decrease the value. Not that I care about what I could sell it for, but you know, like you just mentioned about your child, maybe someday my daughter will sell it or cherish it or whatever. But you know, I just think there's so many axes out there that are user quality. Why would you take a pristine axe or something rare with a beautiful embossment on it and use it? Unless it's the only one you got, then I guess
that's what you got to do.
I don't know how you accomplish that, because you can't just buy a Black Raven for dirt cheap unless you get really stupid lucky. But
yeah.
And then the other problem is every time that head passes through wood, it takes a little life out of the etch. So over time, the etches disappear. So it's just about preserving it. You know, it has nothing to do with, you know, I'm scared to use it, or I don't want it to go away. I want it to be here forever. So I save it. And then that's, for me, paint on a head makes no difference, because if you paint a head and you use it after it wears off a little bit, it looks cool.
Yeah, it looks great.
if you paint a head and you're not happy with it, it's just paint.
Yeah.
It will come off. It's like, it's not rust. You're not permanently altering the steel. So paint it. Don't paint it. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. I do. Yeah. It's, you know, it's how everything goes. You eventually settle into a position. It's like, I don't care. Just take care of it. Use it right. And, you know, don't put bad information out there, I guess is the best way to put it, you know? Right. Yeah. And I've definitely chillaxed over of those mindsets, in the last several years. And I hate seeing them prevail still. I remember I started doing more Adirondack handles, and it's just like the questions still come out. That's ridiculous, you know, and people don't have any information and don't understand why. I bet we could do a whole episode around that alone, maybe. Like, that would be pretty cool. just like we could do a whole episode on the Adirondack pattern, like what, or the double bit and why something like that exists. Like you said, the topics are probably endless.
I know there's, that's a common thing, is just the ignorance. And
yeah, the ignorance, yeah.
Just coming straight out and saying that's ridiculous. Well, wait a minute, because I've been there before. I've probably made those comments, but.
I know I have. I'm not afraid to admit it. Back in the early times getting the axes, I made some stupid comments. Yeah.
I know there's many times things have come out, and the Adirondack candle is one of them. It's like, that's not right. Somebody just stuck a freaking regular handle in there. Mm-hmm. But then start digging into the information that's available, and more is available now than there ever was. Like, it's insane. The amount of information on the internet about axes is incredible. But once you start digging into it, you see, oh, what, that was a real thing. You know, now you feel like an idiot. But some people just, they have in their mind what it is, and that's, you can't change that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, that, you know, they chop wood for, to heat their home. I mean, I, given enough time, I can get a chimpanzee to split wood for me. You know, it doesn't make you an expert, and that's not knocking anybody who's learned through chopping wood. We've all busted a cord of wood, I think, pretty much. Most people who get into axes have been through that experience. But that doesn't always make you an expert. And you find a lot of people that have been swinging an axe their whole life and still don't know anything about it. Or some kid who reads about it for a few years might have more knowledge than the rest of us. It's really wide open. It really is. And like you said, there's incredible amount of information. And with these guys preserving these catalogs and stuff like that, it's just growing every day.
Yep. Yeah, I hope there's even more. I mean, I'd love to see some books published, some actual, yes,
big time
literature from catalogs, reprints, maybe. And I know there's some controversy over that. Well, it decreases the value of whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I don't agree with that. An original catalog is always going to be worth more than a reprint.
Yeah. Yeah.
My problem is if one guy owns the only catalog, when he dies, what happens to it?
Oh, it gets thrown in a bin.
Yeah. I mean, that information is just lost. You know, think of all the information that's already lost.
Yep.
You know, I bought a house years ago, and this kind of works into this. I bought a house years ago, and it was a duplex. Then the owner lived in half, and then the other side was rented out. And at some point, the owner went into a nursing home and then passed away. And then, you know, obviously the family was selling the estate, so to say, estate. It was a house. So the family went in and cleaned out everything that they felt was of value of this guy's property. And after that, they just locked the door and put it up for sale. And it had been empty for years. His side of the house had been empty for years. And obviously all his possessions were still in this house. So I had to do the daunting task of getting rid of this stuff and making way for mine. So I tell you all this to tell you what I found.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, his family had already went through this house top to bottom and cleaned out everything of value. When I went in, the first thing I saw on his couch was a Hudson Bay 4-point blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have it. It's over here somewhere. So what's a Hudson Bay 4-point blanket worth?
Yeah.
Like, they sell for a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I found. I found several cast iron pieces, which you and I both have, you know, affection for. Those were worth money. And probably the single most expensive thing I found is in the one cupboard was a scope for a Colt. It was a Colt. I think it was a Colt brand scope for a pistol, brand new in a box. I had no idea what it was. At that time, I hadn't really been into guns or accessories or anything. I put that thing on eBay, and this is early day eBay, and I put it on for like a starting bid of $25. It sold for over $400.
Right.
So here's all these valuable things in this house that his family already collected or went through and cleaned out, and they took everything of value, right? What if he had catalogs of axes? You know, his mother or sister, or well, not probably not mother, but brother or sister or uncle or what, cousin or whatever, They're not going to know what that stuff is. None of my family knows what any of this stuff is.
That would have went right in the trash. Yeah. Yep.
So that's the point. I mean, you know, it's almost, I don't want to say it's selfish. It's not really selfish, but it's a shame to not share the knowledge if you have it. And I honestly don't think it's going to depreciate the value of an original catalog. I don't see how it could. You know, there's people that want the original, and there's people that will buy that will settle for a reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the people that can afford the original aren't going to buy the reproduction. They're going to buy the original.
Yeah, I think you mentioned a coffee table book. How like, you know, Kelly catalogs 19 so and so to so and so in one compendium, and like you could just peruse it or something. Like as an example. But I mean, like Mike Miller just recently posted. You see that Axe manual that he had? See that? Like, I'd love to look through that. Hopefully he'll bring it at the Axe Hangout, because I definitely want to check that out. Because you know, the knowledge of Axe use now is, I think it's I think it's solely in the woodcraft books and woodlore books and those type of things that are produced these days. Because you don't find it anywhere else. Yeah. Those days are over, you know.
Yeah, people aren't heating with wood as much, and they're certainly not building their houses with axes. So there's no reason to publish it.
Well, we just did 36-minute podcast there.
Nice.
What do you say we cut this one low at that? I can definitely see with a guest on them going a lot further. And I don't know. What do you think? Once a month, we could probably do this comfortably, or just when we can do it, when we can do it.
At this point, I don't think we really need to set a schedule. I think we just do it when we feel, hey, let's do a podcast. I mean,
yeah.
Once we get talking about stuff, you could easily fill up once a week, but time and scheduling and all that stuff.
I think between you and I would struggle to nail that down every week. Wednesday mornings, I mean, I guess I could, but who knows? But we will save that for, you know, off the side banter. But very cool. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed this. This is not even a scratch of the surface of where this can go. And it's, to my knowledge and Chris's knowledge, this is the first podcast related to axes.
Sorry.
Which I think is chief among tools, as far as I mean, that's just my personal opinion. Thanks for joining everybody, and look forward to this podcast will go out to the networks. Hopefully I can work on that today, or at least by the weekend, where you can actually search and find us. Well, which you probably will if you're getting this or not through a direct link. And then we'll secondarily be uploading these as a video, because we're doing this through Skype onto our YouTube channel. So some of you guys who like to subscribe to vidcasts like that can have that option as well. All right, Chris. All right. Well, I'm going to end the podcast, and we'll see everybody soon.
See you guys.